Great, thanks, Linda. All right, so I am hoping that everybody's going to leave here today with something to do, okay? So be ready to jot something down, because we all really need to be involved in this area, trying to advance environmental policy change to support healthy aging. I have no relationships or potential conflicts of interest to disclose. And in this segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about the role of public health, which I think is a pretty critical role in advancing environmental and policy change for healthy aging. I'm going to touch on some goals, priorities, and strategies in this area that have come out of the work of the Healthy Aging Research Network, particularly over the past 3 years. Talk a little bit about the role of online communities, peer support, what we can all do to help each other as we move forward. And also share with you some successful examples of system or programmatic change in this area. This is the abstract. I'm not going to read this. It's in here primarily for the benefit of people who are looking at this online. So in June of this year, N4A put out a very timely and compelling report called The Maturing of America, Communities Moving Forward for an Aging Population. And basically their thesis was that we're facing a perfect storm. So we have the leading edge boomers coming of age, so to speak, and me being one of them. And they're foreshadowing this huge demographic shift. And at the same time, since 2007, we've had this huge and ongoing economic downturn that has wreaked havoc with the budgets of our state, local, and national entities. The report goes on to say we are not prepared. Okay, and I want to read this because I think it's really important. So it says, many U.S. communities have been unable to make significant progress in preparing to meet the needs of the country's rapidly aging population. Advancements are nowhere near the level of progress that has to be made to ensure that communities are livable for all ages. I find that to be a bit chilling, especially since just a decade ago, this statement was made in an international conference on managing the global aging transition. And again, I'm going to read because I think it's important. The aging transition is going to be one of the most daunting challenges of this century. It's an entirely new and unprecedented crisis with no pointers from the past, no lessons from history, no premonitions from the collective memory of mankind. Wow. So, there was a sense of urgency a decade ago, and I would say that our sense of urgency today should be even greater. And here's where public health comes in, okay? We've responded to great challenges in the past, and now a public health approach is needed once again if we're going to be able to address this challenge and ensure healthy aging for people like me and all of you who will follow me in the future. So the vision of public health in America calls for healthy people in healthy communities. So when we say healthy people, does that include the aged, the infirm, people with disabilities? When we say healthy communities, do we mean healthy communities for all? Can we say we have a healthy community if some neighborhoods are chock full of amenities while others are essentially in a state of urban blight? I think not. I think we have a long way to go. And if you look at this wonderful wheel that depicts all of the essential public health functions and processes, I would argue that we need to be applying all of these to the challenge of aging in our society. Okay, So how many of you in this room have an aging focus to your work? Okay, good. There are a few of you here who don't. That's wonderful. Okay, I don't want to be preaching to the converted, okay? I don't think that's helpful, but I think we're at a point where we need all levels and all areas of public health to address aging issues. And admittedly, we have a ways to go to make this happen. Aging is still not sexy to many people in public health. It's not an appealing area of inquiry, and we need to work on that. So, again, I think public health leadership is crucial. I think you all are public health leaders. So let's get ready, if you will. So we need to rouse the troops. So we need to engage other public health leaders, whatever their focus might be, break down the silos, get them to think about healthy aging. They don't have to think just about healthy aging, but if they can add that as a tweak to the work that they're already doing, it can have tremendous impact. We need to engage others, the people from different sectors that Bijah talked about, the planners, the engineers, the architects. We need to educate each other about what it is that we bring to the table so that we can all work together better. We need to collectively assess what needs to be done, and then we need to get busy and do it. We need to design, develop, disseminate. And finally, we need to integrate a lifespan perspective into all that we do. And again, this is the idea that we don't have to just have aging specialists, but people who are focused on children's issues, for example, with a few tweaks here and there, they can also do things that have impact on the lives of older adults in their communities. All right, so let's consider the evidence, and we've talked about this a good bit in the previous presentation, so I'm not going to dwell on it here, but simply to say that the research that is available clearly points to the impact of the environment, be it the natural environment, the built environment, the cultural environment, not just on physical activity and well-being in older adults, but also social engagement, nutritional status, obesity, functional status, mental health. You name it, it's relevant. We know, too, from the work of Powell Lawton, as you'll see in the diagram there, that the environment can be more constraining for individuals when they have functional limitations. And the converse may also be true, that an enabling environment can enable or allow all of us to be fully engaged in the lives of our communities for a much longer period of time than would otherwise be the case. And that would seem to be a very, very worthy goal. So these are some of the priorities for environmental and policy change that have emerged out of the work of the HON over the past 3 years. And I'm going to say a little bit about each of these briefly. Neighborhood design and safety, accessible housing, mobility and transportation options, and protection from environmental hazards. Okay, so we know that not all neighborhoods are created equal, not all neighborhoods are age friendly. So those of us in public health need to advocate for greater attention to age-sensitive issues, whether it's a pedestrian countdown signal or places to rest or whatever. There are things that we know, and we need to put them into practice. We need to also think about other strategies, like providing tax incentives to communities or developers for incorporating lifelong community concepts, or for improving senior-friendly routes, or providing walking guides. One example, Walkwise Drive Smart, this was a NHTSA, that's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration project, that's a good example of a program to create safer and more walkable neighborhoods. So this was based in the community of Hendersonville, relatively small, about 11,000 people, but 32% of those people are age 65 and older, and a significant percentage of those are actually well into their 80s and 90s. So this project entailed a variety of strategies, community education, increased law enforcement, re-engineering, reconstruction of some places in the community that were judged to be problematic for walking, and then also encouraging people to walk more. I think one of the things that's interesting about it from our perspective is it engaged a great variety of partners, both from the public sector but also from the private sector. So you see perhaps surprisingly there the Downtown Merchants Association. You know, they felt that they had something to gain from this initiative. You also see the city schools. City schools? Aging initiative? What is this? Well, clearly, they viewed that the creation of safe routes and safer walking conditions would not only benefit older adults, but also benefit the children that they served. So those are the kinds of alliances that we need to think about to leverage our efforts and move forward. All right, accessible housing stock. Okay, so I'd like to know how many of you would have full access to your home, to your kitchen, to your bathroom, just to get into your house, if you would become disabled either temporarily or permanently. Whoa, okay. That's a little worrisome, and this probably, I think we had about three people who were able to answer in the affirmative to that question. That means the rest of you are at risk, and it's true that across the country, very little of our housing stock is built so that it has inclusive home design features. So this has really important implications for older adults and an aging society. And we have to work both on the supply side and the demand side. So we need to think about things like tax incentives and ordinances that might increase the amount of housing stock with universal design features. We need to think about changing zoning to allow accessory dwelling units. But we also have to think, again, about on the demand side, about educating builders, developers, realtors, and consumers about inclusive home design features. It's interesting, the Board of Realtors actually has an initiative in this area, which I think is very important, and would love to see other organizations pick up on that as well. So I wanted to share an example of this as well. So in Pima County, Arizona, they had the first mandatory inclusive home design ordinance in the country that applied to all single-family dwellings. Okay, so it was advanced by a coalition that included aging advocates, disability groups, young veterans, and some key champions who took up the torch and stuck through it. It required a set of specific features for all homes, things like stepless, having at least one stepless entryway, lever handles on doors, wide doors, that sort of thing, that really can make a difference in terms of accessibility. It first faced tremendous resistance from the building community. There was actually a lawsuit that went all the way to the Arizona Supreme Court. But now you have those same developers who on their websites are touting the desirability of building to universal design features. And over the past decade, we've had 30,000 new homes that were built to these standards. Very impressive. You don't see the same kinds of results in places where there is only a voluntary encouragement of this kind of building. Okay, so the next area calling for greater public health engagement is in terms of supporting, investing in integrated transportation. And when we say integrated, we mean an approach that is journey-oriented, okay? So it considers all modes of travel and how they interact with one another, and also how they interface with things like siting of facilities and residential areas. In other words, we want to avoid sidewalks that go to nowhere and problems along those lines. So we need to be investing transportation dollars in a full range of mobility alternatives, not just public transportation, but also alternatives, specialized transport, especially in rural areas. Thinking about improving roadway design to aid older drivers, because there are going to be a lot more of us out there. We need bigger signs. We need reduced intersection width as pedestrians. And again, this is an area where public health has a role to play. We need to be involved in providing training and aging issues to engineers and transportation planners whose work is really critical in this arena. And again, Pima County, I'm fond of Pima County, using them as an example here. The Pima County Council of Government has an excellent regional transportation plan. It's comprehensive, it's multimodal. It was the development, the result of public, private, and citizen input, and it includes strategies to ensure attention to the mobility needs of older adults as well as other groups. It's available online, and I would recommend it to you. All right, so finally, we need increased attention to other kinds of environmental hazards, air and water quality, for example, medications loose in the environment. We need more systems thinking here, I think, so that, you know, we can build lovely developments that are chock full of pedestrian amenities, but if the air quality is poor or the noise levels are excessive, you know, what have we created? But the problem is we tend not to think about some of these other factors when we think about walkability. And again, that's something that needs to change. It's the whole idea of public health having the capacity to bring together this kind of thinking into a more integrated way so that we can do better planning. One of the interesting approaches to this is, and I think points to another very important factor throughout this whole area, is that refers to the engagement of older adults in these initiatives. And certainly in the environmental arena, there are a couple, and I'm sure there are more as well, but here are two very exemplary programs that are engaging older adults in environmental advocacy. One is the ENGAGE program, which is out of Western North Carolina, and the other is the Leadership Encore Leadership Corps, which is out of Maine. And both of these programs are involved in training older adults to be effective advocates and equipping them with the skills to be instrumental in their communities. Really has potential to have impact and extend the reach, if you will, of those of us who are professionals in this area. So, as we move forward, we need to think about these proven strategies, strengthening our policy knowledge. So, for example, in the area of housing, this is an area that does not have necessarily a very long history in public health. Applying solutions like the 880 solution, that's a great one. That means that when we think about a solution, we're thinking about one that works for an 8-year-old but also works for an 80-year-old. That can help a lot and help us make good decisions and arrive at design solutions that are sound. Multidisciplinary collaborators, very important. We've already talked about that. And finally, just integrating our planning and decision-making in all of these areas so that we're not working so much in isolation, so we can get out of our silos, please, and see if perhaps we can achieve better outcomes through a more integrated practice and policy. Baja talked about the EPC initiative. Just want to underscore some of these things that I think are relevant when we think about advancing environmental and policy change as we go forward. One is the empowering nature of multidisciplinary collaboration and the strength that lends to actually getting things done and getting things done well. The fact that new knowledge is likely to have greater impact when it's tied to action planning, okay? So that's what I was saying to you. Will you jot down something that you're going to do as a result of this session? Otherwise, by, you know, next Monday, you probably will not remember it at all, and nothing, and, you know, it will have been of limited utility, whatever your focus of work might be. The power of all of us to be supportive of one another in creating change, and then also the value of concrete tools. Again, we had a very favorable experience with peer support and online communities in the ETC initiative. Just lots of potential here for leveraging of resources, to avoid recreating the wheel, for sharing best practices, practical tips, for accessing expertise, or maybe even getting mentoring or coaching, working collectively to develop policy agendas, exploring the possibility of social media in this area, all of in the service of translating knowledge into practice, which is, of course, the ultimate goal. Baja mentioned the resources available to you through the EPC initiative, and we certainly hope that you will take advantage of those. And basically, we're feeling like we do have an urgent situation, okay? And we really need public health approaches. We really need public health leadership. And so we would encourage you to join with us in getting ready, rousing the troops, engaging other people, assessing what needs to be done, getting it done, and again, integrating that lifespan perspective into all of our work. There's some key websites here, and just so you'll know, they're in the presentation if you want to access it online, and also my contact information should you want to get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. There's also a couple of pages of key references for all of the work that we've been talking about today, and we'd be happy for you to access that as well. Thanks again to the CDC Healthy Aging Program for their support of the HAN, and to AHRQ for their support of the EPC initiative. And I'll turn it over to Linda. Thank you.